Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. And with me this evening is my good friend and co-host,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of professional wrestling. That is right. Chad and I started this whole endeavor as a movies podcast, but as it so happens, both Chad and I are huge professional wrestling fans and have been for a very, very long time. And so occasionally, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you know that from time to time we'll take a break from our movie conversation, and Lord knows there's enough news going on right now between the Golden Globe nominations, the first look image at the Joker 2, James Gunn basically blowing up the whole of the DC cinematic universe, Zaslav pulling things off of HBO Max for no real reason, and many, many, many other things, including the debut of the Dances with Wolves with Blue People, that makes Chad very happy that it's finally come to fruition, and he can no longer have to worry about whether or not said movie actually exists or if it's just in his head and he's going crazy. So, lots of movie news, but we wanted to talk at this time about professional wrestling because as we enter into January, we are entering into the WrestleMania season. And every now and then, you know, for professional wrestling nerds, WrestleMania season is the Super Bowl season. It is the lead up to the biggest event in the sport, in the industry. It is what was a one-night, two-hour event. It slowly ballooned up to being a seven-hour, one-night event and has now become an eight-hour, two-night event, which this year will take place in Hollywood, in L.A., at SoFi Stadium for the first time since they did it at Staples for WrestleMania 23 when, you know, they were still doing them in basketball arenas. So, this is also be the third time LA has hosted WrestleMania. The other California city to host it would of course be Anaheim, who hosted WrestleMania 16. And WrestleMania 13, 16 and 13, I believe. We kind of want to walk people through WrestleMania season and what's to be expected and our thoughts and our feelings on some stuff, because today of all days, the internet has told us that Triple H has set his board internally and that they know where they're going and what they're doing. So we figured we'd take today to kind of chat about what we expect WrestleMania season to bring us. So Chad, let's start with this. What is the one match that you want most in LA in 8 weeks?
I go back and forth on this. I think narratively, I think the match, one of the matches should be Roman versus Cody. With, of course, Cody going over since Roman has destroyed everybody for like 2 years. The only thing that stops me from like solidly saying that's the match that I want is the fact that they keep throwing out Dwayne as an option. And while I think Cody story-wise is the better move, the build up and the hype of Roman and Dwayne, you know, that's is going to dwarf whatever Cody can do through no fault of his own. So it's one of those two matches. I go back and forth on what they should do, but it's one of those two.
So my most anticipated match, or my most excited for match, is the possibility of them doing Becky versus Ronda, which they've been putting off for a while. We know about the botched ref situation at WrestleMania 35. It's the story of all stories for Ronda, And let's be honest, like Ronda's second run here has not been as awesome as her first. They've tried to make her a heel at certain points. It hasn't really worked. They've tried to get her over as a heel and give her cheap heat, which doesn't really work. And I think that she works better as a face. And I disagree with taking the belt off of Liv the way that they did. I thought that it was very hastily rushed, and she didn't have nearly as long of a run as she should have. But I understood putting the belts on Ronda, but to what end? You know, immediately after Ronda gets the belt off of Liv, you go right into the Survivor Series women's match, which, you know, is what it is, a War Games match, which, you know, is a completely different animal than your normal one-on-one match. And then they're not going to have they just had their NXT pay-per-view, but we're not going to have another premium live event till the Rumble. So what really was the point of putting the belt on Ronda to build what feud? For what? For the last 2 months of the year? Why not keep it on Liv for the last 2 months of the year and have her drop it at the Rumble? But if they're going to do Ronda versus Becky, I think that draws eyebrows, especially considering that, you know, Sasha Banks is off the table. Charlotte is just recently coming back from her marriage, her honeymoon, and all of that. You know, and we'll see. But I think that would be my most anticipated match.
I'm kind of intrigued for that one, but really, I mean, it's all about Becky and less about Ronda. I haven't, you know, like you said, this second run hasn't been all that great, and I'm really not at all excited about Ronda. So I kind of don't care what she does.
I don't think they've really known creatively what to do with Ronda in this second run, because she doesn't, they ran her through everyone the first go around and dominated everyone in such a great fashion. But a lot of the division in the names and the faces and the type of wrestling that was being done changed in the 2 years that she was gone. So, like, it's a different division and it's different competitors now than what it was. And so you have to factor that in and change her character a little bit, because she can't be the dominant badass that she was on her first run, but she also can't be a whiny you-know-what and just pout all the time. She has to be some kind of middle ground where the fans can relate to her. And I feel that's kind of been their problem. They don't really know how to give Ronda that middle ground. And, you know, that the end of that run, that first run, was building toward that match at 35. And I don't think they brought her back with a real storyline or a real idea in mind. They brought her back because they needed another star for WrestleMania in Dallas, and they knew that they could get her the Rumble win, and they could get her in Charlotte. I still disagree with the old man's thing about Charlotte versus Ronda last year, when I feel like Charlotte and Ronda and Becky together in a triple threat in Dallas was the way to go. Or just straight up doing Becky versus Ronda in Dallas last year was the call. But, you know, the old man was crazy and you know, half out of his mind most of the time anyway. But, like, I think that would have been the right call.
Yeah, that's probably, well, last year they had they set up the whole thing with Becky and Bianca.
They used that match to set up Becky and Charlotte, but that's not who has the beef. The beef isn't with Charlotte. The beef is with Becky. You didn't beat me. I never tapped. It's the double turn that happens with Shawn, with Brett and Austin. You know, in the I Quit match. Austin never said I quit. Austin just passed out from all the blood rushing from his head. Like, this ref botched this spot. We all acknowledge that, even Vince has acknowledged that the ref botched the spot. He called for the bell. I never tapped. You never beat me. And we need to settle this. because I'm here for what's mine. That should have been the story. Her beef with Charlotte is just, I'm better than you. No, you're not better than me. I'm the best. And that's the story they went with. And they used that 35 match as a jumping off point for that. And I think the better play, the more compelling story play, was to use that match to jump off to Becky versus Ronda.
Mm-hmm. And no, I'm not saying Becky that.
I'm not saying Becky versus Charlotte wasn't a good match. It was both at Mania and at Backlash, but it was both Mania and at Backlash, but it wasn't the best story, I guess you could say.
Right. Well, I think when they did that, their idea when they did Charlotte and Ronda was Becky and Charlotte are our two biggest stars. So we're going to, it's kind of like kind of double dipping, but not. We're going to get this main event with Becky and with Charlotte and Ronda this year. And we can flip it into Becky and Ronda next year, even though, because we know that's the one people want. And we can get Becky with probably our third biggest star and up and comer, Bianca, last year. So it's like win, win, win all the way around. Even though, you know, logically, as you said, it should have been Becky first, but this is the way they went. I think everybody's better off from that point, except for probably Ronda.
Well, I mean, you have to remember, too, the place that Becky's in last year. Becky was in ultimate heel run mode from the time she came back at SummerSlam until Mania. She was in ultimate diva heel mode. So that is an ideal situation to juxtapose her against Ronda, who is the babyface in that situation and can play to that to a large extent. And so I think the timing would have been better last year. But you're right, the plan was always to flip it for this year, but. So, I mean, new creative people, new people in charge, new creative. So that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. So, this will be Triple H's first full-fledged WrestleMania.
Let's go back and talk about that for a second. So, obviously, the week before SummerSlam, this huge, you know, announcement basically happens. Essentially, the board of directors is saying that, okay, the Wall Street Journal breaks a story about Vince being possibly having done some financially inappropriate things. The board of directors then pays some law firm $3 million to go do an internal investigation. The internal investigation report comes back, and magically, 24 hours after the report is given to the board of directors, Vince magically decides at 76 years old to retire. And so, a week before SummerSlam, Triple H has to take over as CEO and Chief Creative Officer. And so, there was very little that Trips could do about the creative direction of SummerSlam. Obviously, he did make some changes, as evidenced by the arrival of Damage Control and some of the other things that occurred directly after that, but there was very limited stuff that he could do. Going forward from that, a lot of the booking that you saw at shows like the Clash of the Castle, which was an awesome overseas pay-per-view, and I think has really set the tone and tenor for them to do more overseas shows, and possibly we may be in the environment that is rich enough for a overseas WrestleMania, which is something that has been floated about for decades. And just, you know, for one reason or another, back in the 90s and early 2000s, it was a tape delay issue, you know, time differences and things. But you've shown now with the WWE Network and then with Peacock that if you put a pay-per-view on at 9 a.m, people will watch. The World Cup is proving that right now, that if you put soccer on at 9 a.m, and people in the U.S. will still watch. So if that's not as big of an issue as it once was, and the crowd reactions in Scotland were what they were, and I think that show really lends itself to a potential WrestleMania overseas. And say what you want to, but Survivor Series would never have been a War Games had Vince still been around. That would have been an totally different thing. So, and we know that the NXT brand is surging again, as it tends to on a regular basis when Trips and Shawn are in charge. So we've seen the rise of that, which has been something that's completely different. And I think that the tone and tenor of today's announcement that, like, that Trips has got his plan locked in. I mean, in all reality, Vince locked in some semblance of a plan in about 3 weeks from now, early January to mid-January. Before the Rumble, there would be a plan in place. But it would, as everything was with Vince, is always shifting. It was never concrete. It was never, like, solid that this was the direction that we were going. That seems to kind of be changing with Trips. The belief in the belief internally is that Trips has a more cohesive storytelling structure and things flow better story-wise. And I think we've seen that with some of the progressions of some of the characters and story development that we've seen since he took over. So there's hope. But again, we don't really know and won't really know until Mania. So what are your thoughts with Triple H at the helm and William Regal coming back?
I think Mania, the way his storytelling is working, he likes longer form storytelling and more complicated storytelling, because their story.
Gee, imagine that from a guy who came of popularity and age in the Attitude Era.
But I think this is even a step more complicated than that. Like, just for tonight's example, we're recording on Monday night, and Raw just went off. And the very first match was a match with Alexa Bliss and Bayley. And at the end of that match, Alexa Bliss hugs Bianca Belair, who was at ringside after she won the match. And the Bray Wyatt, Firefly shows up on the screen, and she goes into a little trance, and she sets up Bianca for the Sister Abigail, and it goes off, and then she comes back to normal. She doesn't know what's going on. And they've done, like, little bits with Alexa for, like, the last couple weeks since Bray's been back. But Bray hasn't been on Raw. And as far as I know, Bray, they haven't even had any sort of interaction. So Alexa is over here in this other storyline dealing with Damage Control and Bianca and the Women's Championship. And there's this thread of Bray Wyatt that is not foreign. It's not like it's coming out of nowhere, because Alexa does have a history with him. But outside of, like, it's literally been like 5 seconds over 3 weeks on Raw with Alexa in this storyline. Like, it's, he's seeding little storylines in other storylines that are going somewhere completely different. So there's multiple things going on, like, at all times. And I think it's more ambitious than what he came up in. I think it's very possible. I also think it's very easy for that kind of stuff to fall apart. But so far, he's been running it well. But because he's new in the role, he has that honeymoon period. And I think WrestleMania will be the culmination of his honeymoon period. It is going to be what he's been building since SummerSlam, coming to fruition at Mania. Everybody, ever since he took over, people have been more excited about what's been going on with WWE. So I think they'll be more excited about WrestleMania, because I think the things he's been seeding since SummerSlam, some of them are going to come to a head there. We're going to get more as we get closer, of course. So I think Triple H is kind of playing with house money. He can kind of do whatever he wants, and people are going to accept it because he's still the new guy. And it helps that he's brought in wrestlers that there's been more wrestling on the shows. There's been better wrestling on the shows. and there's not as much of like the annoyances that Vince had. I think over time, people will find different annoyances with Triple H, but I don't think it'll be a while before it gets to the point it was with Vince. But I think this WrestleMania, he realizes what he has. It's his honeymoon. Again, culmination of the honeymoon. I think he's going to put his best foot forward. I think he's going to make the best card he possibly can, given everything going into it. So I think it's going to be a good show. Well, where will it rank among WrestleManias? I don't know, but I do think it'll be a good show. But really, that's not saying much, because as much as I personally have bitched and complained about WWE over the years, when I sit down to watch WrestleMania, even if I haven't watched much of anything before then, I'm all like, WrestleMania always is at least good, entertaining to good. So I think Triple H has a low bar to clear there. I think he will make it good. Now, anything above that, you know, that'll be extra. As far as the regal of it all, that is, he is a great talent to have. I was surprised that they let him go. But just today, I was, there's been a lot of stuff that's come out about him, how and why he left AEW. But I saw something today with him talking about leaving WWE. And even though they let him go, he said Vince was very gracious about it. And Vince actually let him out of his non-compete contract, non-compete clause, before his contract was up, so he can start working with AEW. And he said he was the only person, as far as he knows, that was getting paid from both companies at the same time. So it wasn't like a negative split, but which makes me wonder why they let him go in the first place. But you know, Triple H really loves Regal. He understands having him around is very beneficial, so he brought him back. And I think you can only expect good things from that. He is a great mind to have around.
And another building block with the NXT team, and vice president of talent development, or whatever the title is going to end up being, is going to be very critical. And it's something that he loves, and something that he's talked about a lot is being a presence and a positive force for the coming generation. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. So you brought up the honeymoon period, which I get. But like, it's, Mania is something different because it's kind of like the Super Bowl. You know, take the Joe Burrow of it aside. If Akili Smith had been the quarterback of the Bengals in that Super Bowl, people still would have watched. Even here in Louisiana, people still would have watched. Would they have watched in as big of numbers? Probably not. But everybody would have watched because it's the Super Bowl, and because they grew up knowing the Super Bowl, and they have memories of the Super Bowl, and favorite moments from the Super Bowl that they can recall. And they spend the entire week before the Super Bowl bringing up all those old memories and showing all those old clips and dragging out the Hall of Famers and introducing the new class and all the things that the NFL does, right? WWE does the exact same thing. And it gets us in our feels, and it gets us reminded about why we love this stuff and what made us fall in love with this product in the first place. And the thing about Trips is a guy who knows that you love this stuff and wants to constantly renew your love for it. And that's a lot of what NXT is about and has been about since its inception, since they changed it in 2014 from Florida Championship Wrestling to NXT. It's been about reminding you of why you fell in love with this product and giving you new reasons to fall in love with it every week. But he's also a cutting edge businessman. Where Vince understood the power and the financial benefit to pay-per-view before anybody else except for Don King did, Trips is recognizing the power and marketability of social media, and is on the forefront of making some business decisions, because he constantly talks about multi-platform storytelling. And by that, he uses the Bray Wyatt thing as an example. They tease the White Rabbit, right? They gave you a QR code to scan with your phone that led you to this website, that led you to this clue. like the Batman that we saw in theaters in March. Same thing, had a virtual component to its marketing. Trips is very open to embracing that kind of storytelling, that level of storytelling, which I think is going to keep him ahead of the game, no pun intended, in terms of being successful. I don't think his honeymoon ends with Mania. I think Mania is just the celebration of the year of wrestling and everything that's come before and everything that will come after. But Tripp strikes me as the guy who's different from Vince in that Vince never thought beyond the next night. So, like, Vince never was like, just get to Mania, get to Mania, get to Mania. Vince didn't think about what happened after Mania until Mania was over. Now we have a guy in charge who is thinking not just about the four pay-per-views they've got between now and Mania. He's thinking six steps down the road after that. And I think that's going to be the change, and that's what's going to be different.
So, for the most part, I agree with all that. I do know that they're, like, everybody thinks of Vince, like, you know, more contemporary events. But I know that there was a time when Vince was that guy. He didn't think about just for the night. He thought about down the line. I distinctly remember sometime in the Attitude Era, someone did an interview with Shane. And they were talking about how they planned all these things. And Shane was like, you know, we plan these things. The plan is like 6 months out. So we're always 6 months ahead of where we want to be. And I do believe that that was the truth. I think somewhere along the way it changed. And they just never went back to that. But it was always something that stuck with me.
I think he didn't feel pressure to be that far ahead anymore. Because he always felt like he had someone on his back. And then after there wasn't anybody on his back anymore, why do I need to plan? Why do I need to put effort and time and energy into all these things? Because I'm the only product. No one's coming to beat me. So why waste my time and energy and effort on 6 months out of planning when I can plan 1 month at a time and still make the same amount of money?
I don't know if you'd approach it like that, but I do think that was like the gist of what happened.
And, you know, I'm also interested to see what happens with Shane. You know, he had conveniently stepped away this time last year, remember? They got into that big fight after the Rumble when Shane put himself into the Rumble. And then he left. And then Dad left 6 months later. And, you know, Shane and Trips have a very good history and have a very good relationship. So it would not at all surprise me to see Shane step back into the fold at some point. Because we all know that he needs to die for his father's sins. but, yeah, I think somewhere along the line, Vince didn't feel the need to be as creative and as long form in his storytelling as he so much as was, you know, here's a script, let me tear it up 3 hours before showtime.
Right.
So let's move from that to the Rumble match itself. That's the point we're working toward now. We're going old school. There used to be a time when there was, you know, we did the day one pay-per-view last year. They're not doing that this year. There used to be a time where there'd be a pay-per-view before there'd be Armageddon, you know, at the end of December. And then you'd go to the road to the Rumble. This year, there's not a day one. There's not a New Year's Revolution. There's not a Armageddon. There's just the NXT pay-per-view you had over the weekend. And that's it. So now we're officially on the road, and we're leading to the Rumble match. At this moment in time, Chad Metz, who is your men's Royal Rumble winner for 2023?
See, that all goes back to that. No, actually, well, so if it were me, and if Cody's coming back at the Rumble, but you're going to do the match with Dwayne, I wouldn't have Cody win because I would want Cody to have like all the shine of if he wins, I want everybody to know that what you think is going to happen is going to happen at WrestleMania. If Dwayne is actually going to show up at WrestleMania, then I wouldn't have Cody win. I would have... I know a lot of people would just say, well, then put The Rock in the Royal Rumble. He kind of doesn't need that.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's walk through this, okay? So, because I figured that would be the bulk of what this podcast would end up being about, honestly. So, we are all of the mind that they have two potential winners of the Rumble, the men's Rumble. And it depends on which way they want to go for the main event, for the men's main event of WrestleMania. The thought is that it's either Rock in the Rumble to quote unquote earn his spot against Roman and go on, win the Rumble, challenge Roman, do the WrestleMania thing. Option two, Cody Rhodes returns from injury, pulls the whole Edge thing from a couple of years ago, comes back off of injury as a surprise entrant in the Rumble, wins the Royal Rumble, challenges Roman for the championship, and beats him. I don't believe The Rock... First of all, The Rock hasn't been in a Royal Rumble match in 20 years. He only won one, and that was the 2000 Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden in the botched finish with The Big Show, which led to the Fatal 4-Way McMahon in Every Corner match at WrestleMania 2000. Because Austin had to have neck surgery and wasn't available. Now it was Taker for that Rumble. That WrestleMania, by the way. It was the rare WrestleMania in the Attitude Era where there was no Taker match and no Austin match.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't think that we've talked about this on our podcast before, or in our conversations before. Dwayne can't just hop back in there with no foresight, with no training, with no anything. You can't just throw him into a match with Roman at Mania and have it work. He's gonna have to work some, whether that's in the Performance Center or whether that's on the road. But I can't see them putting him in a situation where he enters the Rumble, even at number 30, because then you're talking about maybe potentially 20, 25 minutes after that. You know? So, like, I don't necessarily know that you bring Rock back in the Rumble, and I don't necessarily think that you bring both men back on the same night. Because if Cody comes back at, say, 20, and Rock enters at 30, what do you think the headline's going to be the next day? It's not going to be Cody Rhodes returns from torn pectoral mat in the Rumble. It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson returns to WWE for the first time in a decade, wins his first Rumble in 20 years, and challenges Roman Reigns in Hollywood. That's going to be the headline. So I think you get one or the other. I don't think you get both. I do, however, think that the possibility does exist for them to do two matches in two nights.
So, yeah, I've heard that too, that to have Roman be on both nights and defend against both of them.
Because they booked themselves into that problem a year ago with the old man's hair up the ass decision to unify the belts.
Right, right. Which, a quick aside about that, I don't mind them merging the belts. I don't mind them combining the belts. Because, actually, this is exactly how I would book it, how I've wanted them to book it for years. Have one heavyweight champion. He can go wherever he wants. He can feud whoever he wants to on either show. And both shows have their own independent big TV belt, which is the U.S. and Intercontinental. And since SummerSlam, Triple H has been doing his damnedest to elevate particularly the U.S., but the IC title as well. It's not getting the same kind of attention because Gunther's had it and he's been the only one to have it. But the U.S. title, the top stars on Raw, that's what they're contending for. They're not even thinking about Roman Reigns. They're contending for that belt. So the elevation is working, but elevation is slow. But I think people have come to understand that the belt means something on Raw. It's the biggest belt on Raw with the biggest stars going for it. And that's what I've said they should have done for years. So I don't want them to split the belts apart again. I think having one champion makes it more special. Roman Reigns has become an even bigger star because he is a champion of both brands. And when he shows up, it's a big deal. Now, you can feel however you want about him showing up whenever he wants to show up, but it's made him a bigger star because he is more special, because you don't get to see him every night and you don't know he's primarily on SmackDown, but he might show up on Raw, and that makes it a big deal. So, okay. So that aside, the decision might've been a hair up the ass, but I think it can work if given the time. Having Roman defend on both nights, it solves the problem. That way you get Dwayne, you get Cody, and you get them against Roman. The thing with that is, logically, you would put, if you were just going by star power, you would put The Rock on the Sunday night. But since I don't think Dwayne is beating Roman, it would be Rock and Roman on Saturday, Roman and Cody on Sunday. If they do it this way, Cody has to win. So Roman beats Rock, and then Cody beats Roman. Roman has an out because he had two matches over the course of the WrestleMania, and then Cody cements his reign by beating Roman again the next month. I think if they do it that way, I think that's the way to go. Everyone that has ever watched wrestling should know that that's what's going to happen. It's the obvious thing to happen, but just because it's obvious doesn't mean it's wrong. I think that's the easiest solution to their problems if Dwayne is going to be involved in an LA Mania. And if Cody's going to come back and you do the story that you built up when him joining the company in the first place, of reaching the brass ring of the title his dad never had, and beating the guy that's had it for 3 years, the guy that has been the guy. It will transcend Cody, who showed up in WWE and wasn't a big star. This will make him an even bigger star. I think that's the way to go. But we still don't know if Dwayne's going to be there.
Okay, so that doesn't account for my standard position, stated position, which is there's another option for Dwayne at WrestleMania. There's an option for Dwayne that involves a certain bald gentleman from Texas. A Texas rattlesnake, if you will. Because rumors abound that they're willing to pay Austin to come back for another match. And do you know what match happens to have its 20th anniversary this year at WrestleMania? That would be Austin versus Rock 3. The match that ended Stone Cold Steve Austin's career up until last year. The match in which he finally put The Rock over in Seattle at Safeco Field, which is now T-Mobile Park, where they were going to go back for a Royal Rumble that COVID canceled. So I think that if you just want to do Roman versus Cody and just have Cody come back, that's great. That's a great story. That's a great way to build it. Do the 3 month anticipation. It'll be worth it. But if you still want to have Dwayne there and you still want Dwayne to have a big match and you still want the nostalgia factor, imagine the people our age, old crotchety men who would be all up in arms to see the match from their childhood one more time to decide who truly was and is the face of the Attitude Era. And neither one of them would have to go more than 20 minutes. You could book it the exact same way you booked the Austin match against Theory against Owen and Owens last year. You can do the inventive thing, because all three of their matches at WrestleMania were no holds barred. The match at 15, the match at 17, and the match at 19 were all no holds barred matches. You can book that match in a way that gives everybody the nostalgia they want and doesn't put Rock in the title picture. So I think that should be, at least in my mind, a legitimate option on the table if you want both Austin and Rock on the show. Let them face each other.
So the one problem with that is in both of their last matches, they were working with guys that were working right now. In that scenario, you're asking two guys that haven't wrestled in forever to come together. Like in the Cena carried the Rock match, Rock was,
Rock literally tore his groin in the first 5 minutes of the, I can't remember if it's the first match or the second match.
It's the second. I think it was the second one.
Yeah, he completely tore his groin off of it, off his hip in the second match.
Right. So, and Austin had Kevin Owens to carry him for what he did. These
and a very botched Stone Cold Stunner on Vince McMahon.
Well, that's all Vince. That ain't got nothing to do with Steve. Vince is just Vince when it comes to these damn stunners.
The stunner that will live in infamy.
Logically, what you're saying makes sense. I just don't think the mechanics of those guys working with each other. I know they love each other and they were probably like really work really hard to do it together. But I think to have the best match, they need to be working with people that have been working. And
you don't think that they could get together in the performance center and go over it multiple times? Because just think of the promos alone that those two could cut.
The promos would be good, but I don't think either one of them are going. They're not going to want to go in the ring. Like the reason it took Austin so long to do this was he didn't want to come and look like crap in the ring, and he said it in more coarse language than I just used. Like, I didn't want to come back and look like crap. So, yeah, he put in the work, but he also had Kevin Owens, and this Kevin Owens is a pro's pro, and that he wanted, like, to say he gets to be at the time, the last match of Steve Austin is such a feather in his cap. So he goes above and beyond to make sure the match works to the highest capability it has. Same thing with Cena. By the time those matches happened, these were the matches of the century. So Cena's putting in the work and is able to carry the Rock when, you know, old age and ring rust kicks in. And let's not forget, that last Cena match was over 10 years ago at this point.
2012.
Yeah, so by the time we get to WrestleMania,
2012 and 2013 are those two matches.
Yeah, so we're good.
So exactly 10 years ago.
Right. So now they can want to do it and they might talk themselves into doing it. But I think if a smart booker would be like, I see what y'all want to do. Maybe y'all can have a moment after somebody's match, but to have a full-fledged match, because between those two, it can't be like, you like we've seen like Brock and Goldberg and whatever, and they go in big move, big move, big move. It's done in like 5 minutes. You can't do that with Rock and Austin. They got to go at least 10 to 15, probably 20. And I don't think they can do it together on their own. Now you could do, you could do things to cover it up, like having a tag match, but I don't think anybody really wants other people in there. We want Rock and Austin. And if you put a tag match, people are very much aware these other two dudes are going to do most of the work. Austin and Rock get in with each one of them, do their moves.
You're talking about the Survivor Series match before that first Cena Rock match. With R-Truth and Miz with Rock and Cena.
Yeah. Something like that. Which I forgot that even happened. So that's why you're probably not going to go to tag match route. So
they did that because of what we talked about earlier, which is they wanted to get Rock some work.
Right.
Without it being the return of the Rock. And Rock has a very deep and storied history with the Survivor Series pay-per-view because that was where he debuted and mm-hmm. And so it was like the 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary of the show or something. And so they worked that as a way to get him back in a WWE ring and ready for what they knew was going to be the Royal Rumble against Punk. And then what they knew was going to be the WrestleMania with Cena.
Right. So we haven't even talked about that. Yeah, they'll probably want to get Rock some more work in front of a crowd. I mean, they could always, but then that takes away the whole, you know, first match back kind of thing. They could always ship him down to NXT to do some stuff, but
no, I think they do the Performance Center stuff. We saw that documentary with The Undertaker. Like, Taker worked a lot of those matches with people at the Performance Center, rehearsing them and going through them step by step, because, you know, the dude's a ring general. I could very easily see them in a controlled environment like that working on that shit to its perfection, because both men are gonna want to put on a show. And the other factor too, and this is the part they'll never get talked about, like, Mike Chioda is the most senior referee you have on staff right now. It would have to be Chioda who refs that match, because he's the only one who would have ever worked a match with those two, and would be the only one who would know how to call it and help those two guys. So that's another factor too. I just think that the goosebumps that would ensue from a stare down in a match between Rock versus Austin with those two entrances and Michael Cole absolutely losing his mind and Jerry Lawler on commentary would just, it would sell itself. And that would be a more gratifying thing for me than a match with Roman where he loses Roman's declared the head of the table, only to turn around and lose that the next night.
I get what you're saying, and I do agree to a point. Like, I do agree, like, the promos and the entrances and the stare down, I think all of that, yeah, people are going to pop crazy. But then the match has to happen, and we're dealing with, so I'm 41, so The Rock is 50, Austin is pushing 60. We're dealing with these two AARP dudes that have to carry a whole match for 15 to 20 minutes. And if they can do it and prove me wrong, more power to them. They are two of the greatest of all time. It would not
be. That would cement their place as the greatest of all time.
Right. But
you would also at that point have the issue of who do you put over? Because Austin has the 3-1 lead at WrestleMania.
Right.
The 2-1 lead at WrestleMania. A Rock victory ties them at 2-2 and really gives credence to an actual conversation about who the face of the Attitude Era and who the greatest of all time is. And an Austin win just puts an emphatic exclamation point on that. So I don't even know who you put over in that circumstance.
I mean, for this type of match, it really wouldn't matter.
It would matter for the build, because the whole thing's going to be built around legacy. The whole thing's going to be built around, you know, in our primes, you know, I beat you twice. You only got me once. I'm the better dude. And The Rock's ego not being, nah, bro. I'm the great one.
Yeah. I mean, in that scenario, I would probably put over Rock.
Rock should have gone over at 17. Like, instead, they did the heel turn, which I get because it's Houston and all the things, but still.
And he left like two nights later. Like, he was on Raw the next night, but then he left to do
Scorpion King.
Scorpion King, yeah. So, I mean, you could
have. Has Rock ever talked about that night? Because as many times as I've rewatched that match, that man looks pissed coming out off that ramp. So it almost seems to me like something changed that night, because if you remember, Finkel makes the announcement about No Holds Barred as the match is starting.
Right.
The match was not booked as a No Holds Barred match.
Right.
So it always looked to me like something changed that night, and that Rock wasn't happy about it on his way up the ramp.
I don't think he's ever talked about it. I know I've heard Austin talk about how if he knew then what he knew now, he would have audibled himself at the end of that match, and instead of really shaking Vince's hand, he would have turned around and gave him a stunner to remain face, instead of the heel turn that we got. But I've never heard Rock talk about that night.
So if it's not Rock, who is Austin's opponent? Theory?
Yeah, you could do that.
I think you want to do Theory Cena, so Theory would probably be off the table.
That's right, that's right. I was thinking, like, when you said Theory, I'm like, it seems
theory
like he's
Cena
doing something.
Theory Cena is on the table.
Yeah.
If Rock and Roman are in Rock and Roman and Roman and Cody are on the table, Lesnar versus Gunther is on the table.
Right.
Cena versus Theory is on the table. The two guys to lose their cash ins match is on the table. Who else? Like the rumors about McAfee and Logan Paul. Mm-hmm. So that's on the table. But who would be your opponent for Austin, given everything that we've just talked about, and given the needs for the old man to be carried a little bit?
That is a good question. I'm trying to run through,
the whole thing last year was built around Texas, and it was built around KO, you know, talking crap Texas, about yeah. Texas for a mall. You can't do that in LA.
My first thought was Seth, but you know they've turned him face. I think they want to keep him face. But
he currently has the U.S. Championship.
No, Theory has a championship. Seth is now the number one contender as of tonight. But you said Texas, and that made me think of JBL, and he's got that big corn-fed dude, Baron Corbin, that's probably going to need something to do, so he can eat a couple stunners.
Yeah, we know he faced Kevin Owens enough times, we know he can sell a stunner. Right. So. I mean, it would be interesting, but we went for so many years with Austin just being off the board because it was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And now he's done it and he took the paycheck. And now it's like, would he take the paycheck again? I mean, it's LA. They need to sell out SoFi. I mean,
he'll be a part of it. Now, will he have an actual match? You know, I mean, we'll see. Yeah, it's logically what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. It's just like, I just don't think they can carry a match with each other.
And what are your thoughts on Brock and Gunter? Because I never in my life would see Brock Lesnar wrestling for the Intercontinental Championship.
Before the summer, I would have said the same thing. But, you know, like I said, they're elevating those titles. So, yeah, Brock competing for it, it does wonders to elevate that title. Gunther is not somebody I would have thought to like put against Brock, but again, you're trying to elevate people. So, yeah, you put Gunther in there with Brock. The way they've been billing him, he is like
he's very much like the Russian dude Triple H faced at SummerSlam years and years ago.
Was that like Kozlov or something?
Vladimir Kozlov. That was it.
Oh, I take him more seriously than Kozlov. He carries himself in a way that is very, like, he's very,
very much Iron Sheik-ish.
Kind of. He's like very business-like, all, and it's just about the business of competition and proving that he's the best. I can see that going translating to Brock Lesnar. But when every time I see that dude, like before I even saw Gunther, I saw one of the wrestling reporters. They refer to him as Baby Huey. And if you don't know who Baby Huey is, people out there, just Google Baby Huey. He's a cartoon character. He's a cartoon duck. Google him and you will see what Baby Huey looks like. And just know that once I saw that, and I saw that before I actually knew who Gunther was, every time I see Gunther or hear his name, I think of Baby Huey. So,
to be fair, you are a DuckTales enthusiast.
I am, but Baby Huey is Terry Toons, and I get the comparison they're going for it, but it has ruined me on that dude because I cannot When I saw the thing about Brock Lesnar and Gunther, I'm like, Brock Lesnar's going to wrestle Baby Huey. And again, everything about Gunther's presentation screams like he is like legit. But I just think Baby Huey every single time I see his name or see him.
Indeed. So your final thoughts on what you're looking for, what you want out of the Rumble, and where you think we are at the end of it?
We talked about the men's Rumble. The women's Rumble, I really don't know.
I got Rhea. They want to put Rhea.
Right.
Rhea's got some real opportunity. They liked her very much before. Because remember, she wrestled Charlotte at the COVID mania.
Right.
So they really liked her. And then when she came back from Australia after COVID, they repackaged her into this Fandom package. Goth Rocker Girl package, now Fandom package. And they really like her. Becky Lynch shouted her out this week on a podcast talking about how much she appreciates and likes her work. So I could very easily see Rhea, who you know, has had some good eliminations in previous Royal Rumble matches, could possibly take that next step.
I'm pretty sure she's been in the Final Four the last 2 years. I know the year Bianca won it, it came down to her and Rhea. So, yeah, they really like Rhea. And actually, I'm glad you said that, because, yes, I think Rhea would be the one to win the Women's Rumble and go on to challenge Bianca and beat Bianca at Mania. Probably through some shenanigans, but, you know, that's probably what's going to happen. As far as the Men's Rumble, like, even if Dwayne is coming, I don't think he needs to be in the Rumble. I think the Rumble needs to be the prime unveiling or proclamation.
The big pop moment needs to be.
It's for Cody. It's Cody. Yeah, sure. This is.
And there's that old the other thing too I'm looking forward to with the Rumble is the old saying, you know, even Kai and Ty got to get a story in the Rumble. I'm looking forward to the fact that, like, Triple H bringing back the idea of multiple stories being told and starting and ending in the Rumble. Because the Rumble match traditionally has been used to start the road to WrestleMania for mm-hmm. people's matches, and I look forward to that actually being the case again.
That is right, yeah. I am looking forward to that.
Between Kai and Ty entering the Rumble illegally and getting thrown out twice... in 2000, and Mick Foley entering the Royal Rumble three different times as three different personas. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of weird, quacky stuff you don't get in the Rumbles anymore.
I forgot that he did that. Yeah, that was fun. I want to see what kind of fun stuff they do, what surprises they'll have. There will definitely be surprises. I don't know where he goes for surprises since he's brought back a whole bunch of people already. But, you know, we'll see what he does. I know we'll have fun surprises, but as far as the winner goes, I think it should be this should all be about Cody's return, Cody's moment, proclamation that Cody is officially going for the thing that he said he was going for when he came to WWE. And I think if they do that, they have enough things going around that they'll get through WrestleMania and build to a good show.
While pleasing the Saudi crown prince in between, I'm sure.
Ugh. I need them to stop doing that show. But money, so I know.
Yeah, and it's also going to be about which celebrities, because it's in LA, and it's going to be about what celebrities they bring on. WrestleMania has always had celebrities, whether it be Pamela Anderson or Cindy Hopper, Linda Hart, Cindy Hopper?
Cindy Lauper?
Yeah. Cindy Lauper back in the day, mm-hmm. Pam Anderson back in the day, Mike Tyson back in the day, Pete Rose back in the day. More recently, Donald Trump. More recently, Donald Trump, Mickey Rourke, Drew Carey back in the Royal Rumble in 2000 in New Orleans, 2001 in New Orleans. So they've done celebrity stuff at Mania and WrestleMania season before. So Floyd Mayweather. So we'll see how that goes and see if they decide to go that route. how many celebrities they choose to include in Mania this year.
Mm-hmm.
Any final thoughts, Chad?
The Rose WrestleMania has snuck up on me. I really wasn't thinking about it, but yeah, there has been a lot of, I've seen a lot of that news show up today over the last few days. And yeah, that time is here. And it never ceases to amaze me how fast it goes from the Rumble to Mania, with Rumble being in January, Mania normally being the beginning of April, and it gets here like that. So it's real quick, and the Super Bowl of wrestling is quickly upon us, so everybody needs to get ready.
Well, ideally, this is where you're putting on your best stuff.
Right.
This is where you're putting on the best storylines, the best matches, the best... Everybody's giving their 100% effort. Because let's face it, post-SummerSlam, they go into a funk. They don't really have the energy or the desire to compete with football in the United States. And they don't have a ton of momentum and energy. Like, you know, you get that time from January to April where you have Mania, and then the period from April to June is a bunch of rematches, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then from whatever the June pay-per-view is to SummerSlam is about SummerSlam and building the SummerSlam. And so once the fall gets here, it's what? Unforgiven or, you know, some September pay-per-view that no one gives a crap about. Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, which is a unique gimmick with this year, but like no one really has not cared about SummerSlam in a long time, simply because they haven't cared about it in a long time. Like, they don't use it for anything. They don't use it to build to any, they don't build to it the way they used to. All of the participants in the Survivor Series matches are determined like a week before the premium live event. And of course December is always a throwaway because it's just the holidays and everybody's traveling and the shows typically aren't that great. So, like, I really feel like we get the best of this product from this company in this four-month stretch. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is see where Trips takes it. And a perfect example of what I was talking about is Roman. When Roman went over Brock at SummerSlam, you knew Roman wasn't dropping those belts till Mania. And to me, that's kind of a problem.
Well, I don't think anybody else is going to carry the belts like Roman did for a while. I think they wanted to, establish a champion, like a really,
they wanted to establish a generational star,
right?
And they've done that. I mean, you're with a 700 plus day reign, you're putting him in the territory of guys like Hogan and Bruno Sammartino. You know, you're putting him in that kind of company. So, like, you're putting him up there on his own Mount Rushmore. The problem is, I think, is this, when we're all said and done and when we're judging this years from now, the question's going to come up, was this generation less talented or less, not necessarily less talented, but maybe less deep than other eras? Because you can look at the era that Hogan competed in, and you can go through seven or eight guys who should have had multiple runs and multiple long runs with a championship. You can look at Austin and Rock's reign in the Attitude Era and go down a list of seven or eight guys that could have, should have, and in some cases did, have long title reigns and multiple title reigns. You can even say that about Cena. You can go down a list of, even though everybody makes the jokes about Rock Cena, Orton Cena 17, like, there, you can name off four, five, six, seven guys who legitimately could have challenged Cena and did challenge Cena and had good matches with Cena for that championship. The question ultimately at the end of the day, once we're done with this, I mean, is this playing field that he's on as good as the playing field that those guys were on? And therefore, is his greatness either certified or detracted from because of that?
I think this generation is probably deeper than you probably think. I honestly, there's more talent in wrestling right now than probably any other time.
Well, the roster's larger. The roster's way larger than it was in the WWF days, and way larger than it was in the Attitude Era days. So therefore, just by sheer numbers, you have more people.
Yeah, I don't mean just bodies. I do think there are a lot of them that are truly talented. But their problem has been not building newer stars. The problem has been not having stars, because you still have AJ Styles and I'm drawing a blank because I just said one name.
Say what you want to, but they made the Shield. The Shield was homegrown in Florida Championship Wrestling,
right?
In NXT, they made the Shield. Those three guys who have carried a bunch of matches and a bunch of championship reigns across this era of WWE is something homegrown. They didn't go get somebody from another company. They made these three guys.
Right. And I mean, if you look at the main eventers they have now, so you have Roman, they made him. Seth, they made him. Lashley started with them. They made him. Brock, they made him. So they've made some. It's just so there are those guys, and then there's Austin Theory, but there's a gap in between them.
Well, there's no.
And I don't mean a talent gap or a star gap. I just mean I do kind of mean a star gap. There's not anybody in the age range that's below, from Roman to Theory that they really developed into the next guy. There should be a guy between them in the star order. So they have stars and they have the depth of challengers for Roman. It's just that depth is older, and because it's older, we've seen them against Roman before. We don't have a level of guys that would be leveling up right now that are a little bit younger than Roman, but older than Austin Theory. You need Austin Theory because he's 25. You need 20-year-old stars to start stepping up. But it's from 20, let's say 28 to 33. They don't really have guys in that range. That's where they messed up. I think they're building their depth back up, but there's that gap right there.
They don't have guys like Edge, where Edge was in the Attitude Era, where Edge is with the Brood and he's hanging out and doing the tag team stuff with the Hardys and the Dudleys, and then graduates to being a main eventer.
Right.
So he starts when he's 20, 28, but by the time he gets to 33, he's ready to take that next step because the path is clear for him.
Right, right.
So I'm just disappointed that we'll never get another appearance from Ryan Shamrock or Ken Shamrock, because I really think that Ken Shamrock should have been the main event, the referee in the quote-unquote fight pit match that was almost certainly a Lion's Den match.
That would have been a good call. I don't know why they went with Cormier besides the name.
The UFC tie.
I mean,
UFC tie, and again, a bigger name, huge name, draw audience, that kind of thing. But Ken Shamrock and Kent Blackman are both deeply missed. I miss those kind of goofy mid-card guys. That was just fun. Somewhere the Blue Mania is smiling. But that'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with our podcast where we normally talk movies, and Lord knows there's a little bit of movie news right now, you can follow us on Twitter at OnTheBrainPod.
I'm at The Best Theory.
I am at BCW TigerFan, and our fellow professional wrestling loving producer is Grant at Grant L. Fletcher. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.